leaders who use humor, particularly in difficult situations, are seen as on top of things and in control. Whether or not they actually are, they're just perceived that way. People who use humor effectively are seen as more attractive. They're often given more job opportunities. Like, there's so many of these individual different benefits, and it goes down to that reality that people want to do things that are more fun. And so that's why this is so important to do well. That's why I mean it as a competitive advantage, because, like, if you think about two people who are pretty equally qualified for a job, and one of them is engaging and you like spending time with them and you go to a meeting with them and you're actually looking forward to it, versus the other person is about as engaging as a brick wall, you're going to naturally find yourself going to that person that's more exciting.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, the show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Andrew Tarvin. He is the humor engineer, which is phenomenal, and we're going to explore that at Humor That Works. He's partnered with top organizations including IBM, NASA, and the FBI, so don't make him angry, to teach professionals how to use humor to achieve better business results. He's a best-selling author and has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, Incorporated, and Fast Company, and was named a visionary under 40. That's because your vision goes the older you get. I think that's how that works. And he was voted that on the P&G Alumni Network. He also has a TEDx talk on the skill of humor, and it has been viewed more than 12 million times, but only half of which were by his mother. So I'm paddling in that boat with you. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Excellent. Thank you so much for having me. Also, that is I just now for the first time realized it. So in that read of things, I have been featured in the Wall Street Journal and the magazine Inc. But by the way that it reads, it makes it look like it's the Wall Street Journal Incorporated.
Inc.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, okay. So we'll parse that. You know what? Let's take it again. I'm just kidding. Yeah. Nope, leave it in. It makes us human.
It makes us human. Right? And also, it's just a funny observation of, like, that bio has been read a number of times in front of a lot of different stages, and you're the first to kind of, like, truly recognize that's really what it's saying, is that it looks like I'm just calling out the LLC name or the Inc. name of the publications. Been published in Wall Street Journal, Inc. and Fast Company, LLC, and the partnership of this company, yeah.
I always love that, especially when people put like LLC in their URL or something. I was like, oh, good. I was really curious as to how you filed your taxes. Now, is that an S-Corp designation?
Yeah.
Is that what that is?
Right.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, cool. I was most curious, and now I don't have to ask anybody. Right. Fill out this. I can delete this contact form. Mm-hmm. Well, tell me today, Andrew, what is on your mind?
I mean, there's a lot on my mind, but I think the big thing that's constantly on my mind, and perhaps even more so in the face of AI, is what's the role of humor for us as particular humans? Like, the role of humor, what role does humor play in the way that we as humans interact with the world, with other humans, and increasingly more and more with other AI kind of technologies? That's what's on my mind.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I've seen some jokes that AI has made. Mm-hmm. They're okay. But is the root of that in your question and your ponderance, is it about where's the line of what makes us human? Like, it's cool that we can have AI to do some neat things, and you've done work with some companies that, you know, would leverage it, IBM, NASA, mm-hmm. and so forth. And it adds value there. But maybe humor is something that is uniquely and distinctly for us humans to create and consume? Or have you had some different thoughts along that line?
No, I mean, I think that's part of it. I think part of it is, how do we, in a world that's becoming increasingly more AI-driven, how do we, one, maintain our humanity, but also then, two, what are our competitive advantages or distinctions, right? Because I've spoken on humor in the workplace for the last 12-plus mm-hmm. years, as a way to connect more authentically with people and to make your own work a little bit more fun. But just more recently with some conversations with other people, it's like, in some ways it is, one of the things that AI is not particularly good at. Like you said, you prompt ChatGPT for a joke and it'll either regurgitate jokes that have already been told before, or if it tries to come up with something new, it's particularly terrible at it. And so it's one way to distinct, but also then just that, like, to your point, like, it seems like a distinctly human thing. Like, one of the things that I say in my program is that to humor is to human, right? Like, it's a coincidence that both human and humor start H-U-M. And the answer, it is, yeah, it is a coincidence. They come from different root words, but it sounds really nice. But it's more of kind of that exploration of, like, could learning the skill of humor actually be a competitive and increasingly more human advantage as you go through and as AI continues to take more and more jobs or becoming an increasing part of our lives?
That's really interesting. And because you happen to be a humor engineer and you can break down how humor works, is humor something that can be learned? Like, or past a certain point, is it, not to go all like Shakespearean, is like, some are born great, some achieve greatness, and some have greatness thrust upon them. Well, could we do like, some are born humorous, some achieve humor, and some have humor thrust upon them? It's like, I went through so much trauma to be this funny sort of thing. Like, I picked up on it early on. And at one point, and you and I talked about this on the phone, is I had thought about being a stand-up comedian. And my dad, who's a certified financial planner, God bless him, put me through college, no disrespect, but he's not the most humorous individual that you'll ever meet. And he basically was like the scene from Happy Feet when Mumble started dancing and his dad looked at him and said, "That ain't Penguin, son, that ain't Penguin." And so I would pick up on these things, and it was maybe television, movies, my mom is really silly. But is that just because of the environment I was in? Am I predisposed to being humorous? Some of that down, because I think in there may be some of those distinctions between us and AI and technology.
For sure. I mean, I don't think that there is definitive research. As far as we know, there's no like ha 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 in our DNA sequencing, right? There's no like that I don't think is there. But I do think, I mean, part of it's probably environment. The way that I think about it is, first of all, we do, at Humor That Works, a company that I run, we believe that anyone can learn to be funnier, right? That you can learn to improve whatever your base level of funny is right now better. Does that mean that people are going to go through one of our programs or watch one YouTube video or read one book, even by whoever it is that wrote it, or take Amy Poehler's masterclass, that kind of stuff, and immediately have a Netflix comedy special waiting for them? No. But does it mean that anyone can learn some of these dynamics of humor to get better? Absolutely. Right? It's a skill, which means it can be learned. And I liken it in some ways to learning a language. Right? I think anyone can learn a second language or more about a language. And some people learn that language through osmosis. Right? Like, they just grew up around funny people, or they grew up around people speaking that language and they never studied it, but they just learned it because it was the environment that they're in. They had a model that they could look at. They watched a bunch of comedy shows, or they really love stand up or whatever. And they just kind of picked up those things. Or you can do it much more deliberately. And I'm one of those people that had to do it deliberately. I'm not a quote unquote naturally funny person. To the point that even though I've done over 1,000 stand-up and improv shows, have a dry bar comedy special, the TEDx talk with a bunch of views, all that kind of stuff, despite all of those kind of accolades in the world of comedy, when people from my high school, who I went to high school with, found out that I did comedy, they're like, "But you're not funny." Like, growing up, I was never the life or the party of the class clown. Like, I was the teacher's pet. This was all a learned skill for me later. And that's very much kind of the crux of what I teach on, is what is that skill of humor as an engineer? If we take it apart, what does it look like? How do we put it back together again? And so, yeah, again, does that mean that everyone's going to be absolutely hysterical and nail it every single time? No, but does it mean that you can learn some of the science of humor and then practice the art part of it and get better? 100%.
Gotcha. And isn't it funny? I was about to say, I felt like I was about to start singing Alanis Morissette. Isn't it ironic? But that's there are things that are on the other side of something we had to work really hard at that maybe weren't natural to us, become the thing that now we talk about, and we're going to speak about, we're making shows and businesses about. Like, I would have never, I probably get the same reactions, although nobody says it to my face, I don't think, that they would have seen me doing, like, leadership stuff and coaching the way I am now. A lot of it came from feeling so daggum awkward in so many social situations and not feeling like I could connect with the people around me, that I started, I would like study, whether it was stand-up or TV shows that were funny, sitcoms. Thank God I grew up in the 90s. I had some really good sitcoms. And now I apply those, but that, like you, it had to be a learned skill, and to the point of where now people that meet me, they're like, oh my gosh, it's so natural. It's like, if you only knew.
Right, exactly. If you had only met me before.
Like, this is a survival mechanism. Yeah. Like,
well, and I think that that is... I think the people who had to learn it themselves end up making better teachers because they knew, one, what it was like not to have that skill, and two, they had to like trial and error their way to it. Because like people who are naturally funny, like my brother is someone who is pretty naturally funny. Like he's a professor, and I would go and watch him teach his classes, and he'd have them cracking up the whole time. And I'd be like, so what were you doing there that got them to laugh? And like, what made you think? And he's like, I don't know. Like, I was just kind of like, that's just how I am. And it's like, so it's hard for someone who is naturally good at something to teach it, because they're like, well, just don't suck at it. Right? Like, I mean, this is what they've
like
talked
Michael
about.
Jordan teaching basketball.
Exactly. People have talked
about
go
out there and win and just wait. What about the parts in between? No, you just win.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's the internet meme of draw the rest of the effing owl, right? Where it's like, how do you draw an owl? They show the first two steps of very basic circles, and then step three is a perfectly elaborated thing. And you're like, no, how do we get to two to three there? And so for me, as someone who is an engineer who was forced to do this and like forced to kind of learn this, because I'm the other thing is like I also didn't start doing improv and stand up because I thought, you know who's funny? Me. Right? Secretly. People don't know. And like, who should listen to me be funny? Like everyone else. It's like, no, like I only started doing it because in university, my best friend wanted to start an improv comedy group. He needed people and forced me to join. And like that push was what I needed to then start to read books about it and for us to practice a bunch and for me to start watching tapes and see what seems to be working and then later to study on YouTube and take courses on it and later move to New York City and take classes on it and learn from like I needed that eventual push. But because I was basically taking notes and looking the whole way of like, why does this work? Why does this not work? Etc. I think it makes it a little bit easier for me to translate to those other people. And what's interesting is that one, we definitely get a lot of great feedback from people who are like, who consider themselves not to be funny, and to like, okay, now I understand this, and now I can try and work a little bit better. But we also get feedback from people who are already quote unquote naturally funny, who say like, oh, now I understand why people are laughing. Now I can actually be more intentional about it so that I get the laughs that I want or increase the frequency or still get taken seriously and not seen as a class clown or whatever it is. Like it creates a greater level of awareness to then be able to practice it.
And what you're doing and talking to leaders and professionals about the science of humor and the art as well, and how they can be funnier. And I love that. Some people may push back and say, oh, humor, we don't need humor in the workplace. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a serious thing. Like, if there was something funny, maybe we went to a show, maybe we did something. But inherently in day-to-day activities, it's not humorous. And this is where I'd be curious about your definition, because I've explored this with somebody and I don't feel like I've landed on the exact right place of the difference between being humorous and being silly. Mm-hmm. So how does this apply in those professional contexts where so many people may see even small bits of humor as being silly, which could venture into the land of unprofessional?
Yeah. Well, I think you create a great distinction. Like, let's first define at least what I mean by humor when I'm talking about humor in the workplace, and then we can talk about why that actually is a competitive advantage in today's environment and a incredibly valuable professional skill. And so the first is defining humor. The dictionary definition of humor is that it's a comic, absurd, or incongruous quality causing amusement, which means that, because a lot of times people think humor and they initially first think comedy, they think stand-up, they think jokes, they think making someone laugh and that you have to try to be funny. And so they assume that humor in the workplace means I got to start telling jokes in the workplace. And it's like, that's not necessarily the case. That's the first part. That's the comedic component of it. Like you said, other people think of, oh, that means silly. That means like I got to dance and always have a super big smile on my face and I got to be wacky and all that kind of stuff. And that might fit under that absurd kind of component of humor. But then it's also something incongruous, just something a little bit different, with again being that the goal is to cause amusement. So it's not necessarily about making things funny, but rather about doing things a little bit differently to try to make them a little bit more fun. And so when it comes to the workplace, the bar for what is humorous is so incredibly low because everyone is so serious all the time, because everything is so stark, that like just by doing something a little bit different, you automatically get people to pay attention a little bit more. So for example, one of the first things that I started doing when I started my career, so I have a degree in computer science and engineering, started my career at Procter & Gamble. And one of the things that I started doing was just adding jokes to the ends of my emails. Like little wordplay fun things that I thought was comedic, right? So in some ways that's comedic, but it's also a little bit incongruous because people didn't expect it, right? I have this long status report. At the bottom it says PS, and then there's some type of like joke or quotation or meme or whatever it is. And that was one of my first entries into it. And I remember doing that for a few months, always a little bit worried that I was going to offend someone by using humor. And after a few months of doing that, I sent out an email and I went to lunch and I came back and I had a bunch of replies to that email. And I was like, oh no, like I offended someone. Maybe the joke that I put was inappropriate or someone like started to say like, this isn't professional or whatever. And it turns out I had offended people because I had forgotten to include a joke. And so all of the responses were like, hey, where was this week's joke? Or, hey, are you still doing the joke? Or, hey, I only read this because of the joke.
I don't know what this report is about, right. But
I don't care about this, but I'm at least opening it because of that. And so, the reason why I bring that up is, one, is when I'm talking about humor in the workplace, it can be that small, incongruous thing that's just a little bit different. It doesn't have to be like I have to become a full-on stand-up comedian. But two, that was my kind of first initial thing to realize, like, oh, me making my own work more fun by having an excuse to kind of share a little joke at the bottom also made it more effective for people. And at least as a project manager, whether or not they actually read the email, to get them to even open my status report email was already a win, right? The humor was serving a greater purpose. And that's where I started this journey and started realizing that there's a tremendous number of benefits to using humor in the workplace, which we can talk about in just a moment. But I wanted to make sure, like, does that definition make sense to you? Like, right, that we're talking more broadly than comedy. We're talking more silly. For some people, their execution of humor is being a little bit sillier. For other people, their execution of humor is being a little bit more comedic. Other people can just be a little bit different. That comes to a little bit your style, but humor is definitely more broad.
Right. Now, that makes a ton of sense. I don't know if you're familiar with the comedian Michael Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching him one day, and he's sitting down at the piano, he's playing, and he's describing what he goes, all humor is, because for him, it's an expression of who God made him to be. And he says, it's you have an expectation, and I violate or break from that expectation. You get something different. And then you find amusement or you laugh or something like that. And he goes, it's literally that simple. There's an expectation. It's unmet, but in an amusing, innocuous sort of way. And I always thought that was such a great just simplification of, well, yeah, I guess that's why you have the setup. And then you have the I really like stand-up comedy. Improv can be fun too. But I love listening to comics talk about like, well, I had to engineer my setup this way to create, because you got to create this expectation so that when the punchline hits, it breaks the expectation. And then that's where the laughs come in.
Exactly.
But yeah, that makes sense. It also makes it more approachable. It's just like, oh, well, so long as I'm tuned in to what the social norms or the expectations of the conversation, emails, or whatever the convention is, I could take a little freedom to violate the social construct, the social contract, but in a way that wasn't malicious. Mm-hmm. It was just in a way that was unusual.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's been various theories that people have talked about. Okay, what is humor? What causes people to laugh? Mm-hmm. Going from superiority theory, which I think was Freud kind of talked about. There's relief theory, which says that we laugh when there's a certain level of tension. We relieve that tension. Incongruity theory was really popular for a long time, which was basically that idea of surprise. Mm-hmm. A gentleman named Peter McGraw, a professor out of University, I think, of Colorado, wrote a book called The Humor Code, which kind of suggests that humor comes from a benign violation. So exactly what you're speaking about is that there's a certain expectation that is broken in a way, like there's a violation, but that we can perceive it to be benign, right? So it's right. Like kind of the definition of like the idea of like why you can't tickle yourself is that it's not really a violation because, right, you touching yourself to like tickle yourself, not really perceived as a violation, but like you tickle someone else that you're close to, then they're probably going to laugh because it's like, it's a slight violation, but it's benign enough that you're okay. Whereas like if a stranger came up to you on the street and would like try to tickle you, you would not probably be laughing, right?
That would feel more like the strict term definition
of violation. Exactly. That's it's no longer benign. So it's no longer funny. Right. Yeah. And that's one of the things that they really wanted to look at, because a lot of people think I even just recently saw a clip from Anthony Jeselnik that was like all comedy is surprise. And it was Christian Saul or someone that he was talking with. And she was like, but not all surprise is funny. Right. There needs to be a second component to it, because sometimes a surprise is terrifying or scary or sad. So what makes it funny? It's that benign piece. And the other way that I kind of think about it is there's a great. I think it's Mel Brooks who said something like, tragedy is I cut my finger. Comedy is you fall into a sewer and die. Right? It's like that extreme scenario, but it's like the violation again is like, if I cut my finger, that's a violation and it's not benign because my finger hurts. If you injure yourself or you fall into a sewer, that's a violation, but because it's happening to you, it's benign and therefore it's funny to me. Right. So that's that juxtaposition of these two things. But what I find really interesting about this book that Peter McGraw wrote is that he spent years working on it. He went to a bunch of different countries all around the world and really realizing that, benign violation holds up and all that kind of stuff. Towards the end of that research, he went and tried to do stand-up comedy and did terribly. And so it's like you can understand all there is to know about benign violation and theoretically why it is that we laugh. It doesn't necessarily make you funnier or help you use humor. So the question becomes, okay, like what can you do to actually learn to improve the skill of humor as opposed to just understanding how it works? You can think about, okay, like, well, how do I actually do it?
Right. Well, it's the difference between, for a lot of leaders, they're just like self-improvers, self-optimizers, and I tell people all the time, if more information was the answer, we'd all be billionaires with six-pack abs. So then it's in the application of that information. But I think humor, like if I want to get in better shape, I could read, I could learn, but I also probably have a good sense of like, well, I could choose a different meal. Mm-hmm. I could do some push-ups. I could go for a run. But where do you get started if you're like, I'm going to be funnier or more humorous? Like, am I just going to like start laughing hysterically out of nowhere just to practice? Like, I'm going to turn into the Joker and people are going to think I've had a psychotic break and I'll be checked into an institution. And, and then that'll be funny to us, right? Because it happened to someone else, but it'll be tragedy for them. So how are you helping people like get started and approach humor in a way that makes it feel like, because it's a risk. I mean, comedy or humor to some extent is an act of vulnerability in my opinion.
Yeah,
because what if I'm being serious and I'm just saying something and you don't like it? Well, then, you know, I'm still guarded because I was just stating some facts, and you can disagree with facts and we can get into that intellectual debate. But if I'm being funny, it's sort of like I'm sharing a part of myself what happens if you don't laugh or you tell me it's unfunny or I've offended you? Well, now you've rejected this sort of vulnerability offering I've made to you. So how are you helping people approach the risk, the perceived risk that comes with being a little more humorous?
It's a fantastic question. And to one, you kind of make the point of like, do you just start laughing more? I mean, there's actually a form of yoga called laughter yoga. It's not actually related to yoga at all, but there are...
Is that the one with the goats?
It should be. Yeah, that's slaughter yoga, which is a different than laughter yoga. It's an S in front, and it ends up way messier. No, that's awful. That's terrible. No.
And it didn't happen to
yeah,
us.
Yeah, didn't happen to us. Laughter yoga is essentially, it's like someone, like you go to a session and the whole thing is that you have a laughter yoga leader who gets you to fake laugh, where it's just like, okay, you're gonna put your hands up, et cetera, breathe in, and now force a laugh. And basically what happens is, one, your body doesn't know, like physiologically, your body doesn't know the difference between a fake laugh and a real laugh. So like if you force yourself to do it, you actually still increase the blood flow through your body. You still get increased air in your lungs. You still relax your muscles. You still all these physiological benefits that come from humor. At the same time, a lot of times it does then generate real laughter because it started as fake awkward laughter, but now you're laughing at the fact that you were fake awkward laughing or whatever. It's not a thing that I particularly enjoy or partake in, but there's some people that absolutely love it as a like practice because it's like, hey, I don't have to find anything funny. I can just do this. So it's like you mentioned it as kind of slightly as a joke, but it's a thing you can do. But instead, there are other practices that we can put into play. And I want to loop back around just quickly on the why should someone do this, right? Because like you said, why take that extra risk and put myself out there? Why express a little bit of that vulnerability when I could just be that serious person like everyone else? And there's a couple of ways we can approach the question of why before we jump a little bit more into the how. One of those ways is through a very simple, very important, very dumb question. Okay. So I want you to answer this for me, but would you rather do something that is fun or not fun?
I feel like I'm being tricked, but I would rather do something.
Yeah. And for those of you listening, I'm guessing your first reaction was fun. That's why I said it's a very dumb question, right? Because it's like 99.9% of humans say fun. But it's a very important question because it stands to reason then if everyone chooses they'd rather do something fun over not fun, if you were to then make, say, your emails a little bit more fun by putting a little joke at the bottom of them, would people be more likely to read them? Right? They were in my case. If you were to start to use a little bit more storytelling or more interesting images in your presentations, would people be more likely to pay attention? If, as a leader, you started to incorporate a little bit more fun in your daily interactions with people or in your weekly kind of check-in meetings with your team and all that kind of stuff, would they start to be more engaged? If you were to find ways to make your own work just a little bit more fun, I'm not talking about like go stand-up comedy levels worth of it, but just find ways to make it a little bit more exciting and a little bit more fun, would you be engaged and want to do it better? And the answer is yes, right? The research shows us that there are all these tremendous benefits to using humor in the workplace, ranging from increasing productivity to reducing stress to increasing perceived likability to leaders who use humor, particularly in difficult situations, are seen as on top of things and in control. Whether or not they actually are, they're just perceived that way. People who use humor effectively are seen as more attractive. They're often given more job opportunities. Like, there's so many of these individual different benefits, and it goes down to that reality that people want to do things that are more fun. And so that's why this is so important to do well. That's why I mean it as a competitive advantage, because like, if you think about two people who are pretty equally qualified for a job, and one of them is engaging and you like spending time with them and you go to a meeting with them and you're actually looking forward to it versus the other person is about as engaging as a brick wall, you're going to naturally find yourself going to that person that's more exciting. And so that's the reason to do it well. We can talk about the how, but I just want to make sure that we kind of looped back to why is this important in the first place.
Yeah, I like a lot of that, mostly because I think it's helped me if I were to reflect back on just being able to use some some humor. Like I gave, it was my first official keynote mm-hmm. that I gave a couple weeks ago. And
congratulations.
Thank you. And I had practiced it with a couple of smaller groups earlier. And then after I got off stage, I was asking some folks that I knew that were in the room. I was like, hey, I'm always looking for feedback. How'd I do? If I get more nervous, I probably try to lean into let's be funnier because mm-hmm. then I'll feel more confident or something like that. And I had a couple of pieces that either they were a joke or they were meant to be a little bit of a break from this is how you scale an organization mm-hmm. and lead it well, blah, blah, blah. And most of the feedback people are saying, no, it was funny. It was engaging. But now I've gotten to this place where I always ask, was I crossing the threshold, the line between, okay, he's using some humor. I'm connected with it. Like you said, mm-hmm. that seems more attractive to just not makes me look attractive, but just I'd be willing to listen a little bit mm-hmm. more, or my defenses are down. I'm willing to maybe consider what this guy is saying from the stage that I don't know from a hole in the wall to this dude's ridiculous. He's like a clown up on the stage. I don't in a polo. What the hell is this? Mm-hmm. And why do I come to these events? And so that was a good reminder for me, but it's still a tension that I feel like I'm managing and I'm always searching for it. There was a joke I included in one piece that I thought was really dry, and I tried it a couple times, and if they thought it was funny, they did not let me know with their faces or sounds from their mouth holes, but I was like, huh? I was like, I thought that would hit better. Mm-hmm. And so now I've noted, I'm like, okay, well, the next time I give it, I'm going to cut that out
yep.
and just keep moving on and find, I know these parts work and just keep iterating.
Yeah.
But I think that, again, that gets into the risk at why is it important? Okay. Mm-hmm. So now I have a bigger why to risk it. But even if I feel like the reward is high, it still feels like mm-hmm. high risk,
yep.
high reward. And even if there's something really good on the other side, it doesn't necessarily mean that we as humans mm-hmm. are willing to take that risk, like saying a joke on stage in front of 100 plus people and not one person chuckled
right.
or smiled. They were just like, yes, and go on. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, damn. So how do you make that part approachable? You tell mm-hmm. them on the why and they're like, okay, yep. that makes sense. I got it. I'm logically with you. Mm-hmm. I understand mechanically this could help me, but I'm terrified
right.
because this will trigger childhood wounds.
yep.
I was made fun of. I was this. I don't like this. Or like you were talking about your people from your friends from high school, like you're doing what?
Mm-hmm.
Like they didn't, it was so unexpected. You almost feel offended yep. that they didn't think you were capable of it. So talk a little bit about how you made it more approachable for yourself. And like you said, you break it down and could help someone else, but
yep.
that would be intriguing. Because I would just tell somebody's like, well, just what do you think is funny? Now go say that in front of folks. And that's probably bad advice.
It's. I mean, it's headed actually in the right direction, especially a lot of the things that you spoke to there. I think that what we talk about is there's an art and a science to humor. And okay. so if you can learn the science piece, that's already going to help just in terms of like what you talked about, setup and punchline, joke structure, how those types of things can work. That's already a starting point. And then you need to find a space where you can have that safe place to practice the art component of it. And so that practice could be an improv class. It could be taking a stand-up comedy workshop or going to open mics. It could be our programs. That's a big part that we do is create that safe space. Or it could be simply like what you did was you said, oh, I tried that workshop out with smaller groups to get feedback, right? Or it's like, can I bring a friend of mine who I consider to be relatively funny? Can I ask them like, hey, what's your thought or your take on this? Or a mentor that I have or the peers that if I'm a part of a fellow mastermind group or whatever, like that's the value of finding these safe spaces to kind of practice it a little bit from an overall kind of like the overall delivery of it is like learn a little bit, find a place to practice it because you got to get it out there, right? Some steps in terms of at least how we train it that I think can be helpful for people is twofold. One is that to me, the skill of humor is three things, right? It's three kind of foundational building blocks. It is your sense of humor, which is essentially what do you find funny? And can you also start to get a sense of what other people might find funny or what they might find offensive or they might find boring, et cetera. So it's your sense of humor, what's funny, what's not. Your ability to humor, which is how do you create funny? Is it because you write things that are really funny? Is it because of the way that you say things you're funny? That's how my brother is. It's just the way that he says stuff that sometimes makes it land. Is it your ability to kind of know what's funny and find a meme, but then be able to share that in a presentation at work that's in a like an appropriate way? Or is it like, can you facilitate exercise? Are you someone where it's like, I'm not funny, but I know this exercise is really good, and so I'm going to do that as part of my training or my program, right? So that's all under your ability to humor, is how do you create more funny? And then ultimately, your agency with humor. This is like, what do you use this funny for, right? Do you use it to solve problems, or are you using it to kind of uplift other people? And this is how you go from, hey, that was a really engaging, funny presentation, to prevent yourself from being seen as that like clown or it was too serious or silly, is that having a clear purpose for each of the humor that you're using. So rather than being like, I want to use humor in my keynote because I want people to think that I'm funny, but versus, oh, I'm going to start with a funny story so that people lean in and they're going to realize that this isn't going to be their normal, boring presentation. And then a little bit later, I'm going to use humor as an association so that I can better explain this topic and they're going to remember it better a little bit later. Oh, I'm going to use visual humor right here so that because it's a little bit dry and it's going to get them to kind of lean in again and kind of refresh the energy of the room. And oh, I'm going to end on this funny thing here so that the last thing that they remember was that they had a good time during my talk, right? So this level of intention makes it so that people aren't like, oh, that dude's like just kind of like trying to tell jokes, and more like, oh, that was engaging because the audience doesn't necessarily know the clear connection, but you had a clear purpose for what you're achieving.
Right.
And so we train those types of things for people to start to look out for, what like kind of this skill of humor, these foundational building blocks, and then give them time to practice. But within those, there's these different competencies. And if humor is a skill and it can be learned, then to me, the question isn't really, are you funny? It's how are you funny? Like, in what ways do you personally use humor already? And so if you start with the things, you kind of alluded to it, if you start with the things that you're already naturally pretty good at, to incorporate that into your humor, and there's some strategic ways to do that, then you can grow. And over time, you can learn the other competencies, but start with the things that you're good at and build from there, as opposed to feeling like, no, every single person has to go out and tell a joke in the first 5 seconds of starting a speech.
Yeah. Right. And that gets back to what you're saying, is that there are different types of humor, mm-hmm. right? It's not all stand-up yep. or improv or sketch comedy or like these like professional art forms. Because I hear comedians, I love listening to a lot of different comedians on podcasts, but they'll talk about there are people who are phenomenal at stand-up, but they're not the guy that's just hanging out, like mm-hmm. cracking jokes and doing stuff like environmentally, and vice versa. There's people who just hanging out with their friends and everything, they are cracking people up left and right. But if when they go and they're like, hey, you're so funny, you should try stand up, and they get up, well, that mechanism does not work for mm-hmm. them, because that's a different skill. It's a different environment. It may not be what comes naturally or intuitively for them. Right? Is that sort of like a picture of what you're talking
Absolutely.
About?
Absolutely. In many ways it is. It's that idea that like everyone's funny in different ways, and that the context can absolutely change that component, right? Like some of the funniest people that I know from the world of stand-up are painfully awkward and shy off of the stage. Myself, like even I speak a lot. Like I've done 700 plus speaking events in my career on humor, and I get people laughing and joking and stuff like that. And probably about a year ago, I was speaking at an event, and I was the after lunch keynote speaker, and I was sitting at lunch with people and just having a regular conversation. I was just trying to learn a little bit about things. They're like, okay, now we're gonna have the speaker. They introduce me, I go up, really great like presentation, a lot of people laughing, etc. I come back and I sit down, and the people at the table, they're like, we had no idea you were the speaker. Like, we didn't even, like, you weren't even particularly funny at the table. And it's like, well, no, that was not my role at the table. It's like, my job is not to entertain you constantly, but also I'm not someone who is quote unquote always on. I use small moments of levity in terms of my introduction, but I wasn't like, hey, let me be the center of attention. And everyone's like looking at me and look at how funny I am. It's like, no, that was not the context for it. And so you're exactly right. It's these different ideas. And the way that we think about it is there's these different competencies. There's 8 different competencies of humor, and there's some that you naturally do already. And so you can just kind of amplify those. Like you said, so what the first one that we often talk about is appreciation. And this kind of fits within that sense of humor, where it's like, what do you find funny? And appreciation is the ability to find humor in everyday situations. And so one thing that you might do, so for the people that are like, okay, great, humor maybe can help me, but I'm either too scared to try, a little bit nervous about it, or I work in an environment that they've already said no jokes whatsoever. Like, appreciation is one where just improving that, just being more intentional about how I'm going to watch comedy shows or listen to comedy podcasts or intentionally seek out humor so that I laugh and relieve stress and become more present for my family or become more willing to like be accepting of a new idea, or that I just don't feel the weight of a long workday and have that impact my entire weekend. Like, that's the art of appreciation. Just something as simple as that and being intentional about it already starts to change, already starts to become a positive way that you use humor in your own life. And it doesn't require you being the funny person at all. It just requires that level of intention and recognition of what the benefits are of using of like humor or laughter and seeking it out.
I love that. It makes me think of like the podcasts or just watching stand-up comedy. I've always, since I was a little kid, loved that. As a matter of fact, my oldest got an early birthday present. He's turning 16 in December, but my mom, who's the one who really got me into stand-up, whatever your views on parenting appropriateness, like, I was listening to Cosby, Carlin, Eddie Murphy, Pryor as like a 10-year-old. I was learning like the 7 dirty words. I listened to the album on vinyl of Carlin doing that. I'm not gonna reiterate those for us now. But it gave me an appreciation. But she got him tickets to go see John Crist, who's coming around, and that's one of my son's favorite comedians. And so it's just a time to go and appreciate, like what you were saying. I was wondering, could you name out those 8 competencies?
Yeah, absolutely. So within the sense of humor, you have appreciation, like I just talked about, as well as consideration. And consideration is that component of like, how good are you at understanding what other people are going to find funny or potentially find offensive? And this is one for like, it's less about you creating funny, but more of like recognizing of like, hey, I thought of this funny joke, but should I say it in front of all of these people? Or here's this really good line, but what's HR going to think, right? It's like that extra like filter.
Like a timing thing?
Timing, but also like a filter or recognition of topic, right? Like, okay, this may...
Like audience.
Yeah, exactly. Is the audience going to appreciate this? Is this... Or is this punching up or is this punching down? Is this aggressive or is this a thing that I can say? Like, I do a little bit of one-on-one coaching with other keynote speakers that are trying to add humor to their speech. And I was just talking with someone 2 days ago and she's like, do you think it's okay for me to say this? And I was like, I think it's okay for you to say that. It would not be okay for me to say that because it was something slightly related to her upbringing in Singapore versus my I'm like the privileges of the privilege. Like, I'm a straight white male born in Ohio, like in the US. Like, it's very different, the audience perception of what I say versus what she says. And so it's like, oh, it's a thing that you could, but I could not. So consideration is kind of recognizing all those components of like, are people going to find that funny or not? It's what helps you to create, like, especially as a leader, make sure that you're maintaining psychological safety and the safe in the surface of still trying to use humor, that it's not aggressive and things like that. So that's your sense of humor, is appreciation and consideration. Within your ability to humor, so how you create funny, there's a couple ways you can do that. The easiest or a good starting point is what we call curation. And this is the ability to take something that you find funny, like a meme or a video or a quote, and know who it's appropriate to share it with. and like why you might actually do that, right? So like you can include, like if you want to add more humor to your presentations, then it's like, oh, share a meme in the middle of it that relates to your subject matter, but you just want to then make sure that it's kind of appropriate for what you shared. You're laughing, so I imagine you have some people that you curate some stuff with.
I most of the things I find funny, I tell people I cannot share publicly because I was like, I'm friends with people from my church and they would not approve. So everybody's like, oh, could you send me some? So I'm always like curating stuff behind the scenes and like, I'll send you a Facebook message. Mm-hmm. I'll text it to you, Instagram message. So I use that a ton. Mm-hmm. I haven't really brought that into my presentations, although I'd like to. So maybe I'll start considering that. Yeah. In college, I made it a rule that I would add Chuck Norris, a picture of Chuck Norris, into every presentation. And I did. I
love it.
For like 2 years.
That's amazing, right? And so that's an example of curation of doing it. But even those small things of you sending it to a friend of something that makes you laugh or smile, they've done research that actually that helps to build relationships. Because they found when two people laugh at the same thing, it brings them closer together.
Even asynchronously?
Even asynchronously. Even still a connection, because you sending a meme to someone that then ultimately makes them laugh is one, you're giving that person a gift of a smile or a laugh, which is nice, right? Maybe they're having a tough day or it's stressful or they haven't thought about whatever and you see it and you're like, oh yeah, that was funny. And it's like, oh, wow, Kenny knows me well enough to know what I like, so we must be friends or we must be better acquaintances or that kind of thing. You can even use that type of thing very strategically, and it's one of the things that's helped us with follow-up emails. And in fact, I was talking to a salesperson, and he was like, this one dolphin meme where it's kind of like, I think he says he'll send out an email to someone, and then if they don't like of something like, hey, did you want to purchase this thing or whatever? If they don't, a couple of days later, he'll send out an email that then's like a picture of or a GIF of a dolphin, and he's like, are you ignoring me on purpose? Which is so dumb, right? But he didn't create it. But he's like that. He's like that has probably earned me over $1 million. He's like that dumb thing over many years has gotten enough people to be like, oh yeah, I took a look at it, and he's gotten a response from people. When he doesn't send a meme, he doesn't get quite the same response rate, right? So that's that's like curation. And then very quickly, we've got creation, which is like if you actually sit down and write the joke and know how to structure a comic triple or a humble brag or whatever some of these techniques are. You've got performance, which is like people who are actually able to get up and deliver it. So that's things like timing, facial expressions, act outs, right? What we traditionally think of stand-up comedians being on stage and kind of how they're able to manage things. And then also within ability to humor, you have facilitation. So maybe you're not funny yourself, but you're the one that brings an applied improv exercise to share with people or a brand new game or like even a question like, hey, let's all go around the room and answer the question of what's the first thing you remember buying with your own money. And so if you do that as a leader, it's not necessarily going to be funny, but it is more fun as a way to get to know people a little bit more. And it's you kind of facilitating the exercise where you're explaining the instructions, debriefing it, et cetera, right? All of those fit within your ability to humor. And then finally, we have your agency with humor, which is what do you use your funny for? And that's either application. So application is how do you use these other personas to achieve a specific goal? So the idea of I'm going to use this on purpose curated meme to get people to increase my response rate, that's an application of an existing currency. Right. So like to solve a problem. And then finally, we have empowerment. And empowerment is how do we actually like, how are you using humor or creating the space for other people to use humor? So not necessarily you funny, but you realize someone on your team is really funny and they're a really good performer. So it's them like, hey, would you want to be the MC at our upcoming offsite? Putting them in a space to kind of leverage and share their humor in a way creates more humor because it's amplifying what they already do.
Gotcha. Could that also be almost acting as like a setup for them? Like there's maybe certain topics they're going to do funny rants or something like that, and it's like on purpose you kind of like provoke them, but it's because it's going to be like really, really funny.
Yep, exactly. It's that like that setup that they just told you this really funny thing about this really funny story that you think would be relevant. You kind of set them up of this idea. Right. It's a thing within improvisation that you want to be really good at, is like to be a good improviser isn't necessarily be the funniest person, it's to also be able to set up other people to be funny, to play this the straight person sometimes, or to play the logical thing so that other things happen. Yeah, all of that can be a component of empowerment.
Gotcha. That makes me think, I play a lot of online video games, mm-hmm. and you start to play with some guys over and over again, and my wife plays with us, and we'll just, like, tee up, and like, they become memes of just, like, jokes. For instance, on Tuesdays, whenever we play, which today's Wednesday, but we were laughing at the meme that says, like, British people be like, it's Tuesday, isn't it? And so every time when we get on Tuesday, it's, oh, it's Tuesday. And then we just like, and then we'll talk in a British accent for like an hour while we're like shooting people in Halo, but we'll tee up and like mm-hmm. set those things off because we know it's Tuesday mm-hmm. and it's a friendly thing. But that's sort of the empowerment. It's like, I want to do it for you. You do it back for me. And now we're all having a grand time.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. And keep bringing all of those things together. Right. And each of these, and these competencies they don't typically happen in a vacuum. And also, there's something that everyone can learn. Like, typically, and we have an assessment on our site that people can take completely free if they want to go to. They can find out which competency they're strongest in. And that's what we encourage, is start with the ones that you're really good at. If you're someone that already does curation stuff, start with that. If you're someone who is in a tough environment but you have appreciation, start with that. If you're like, oh, you're great at empowering people, start. Like, whatever is the competencies that you're strongest in, start with those while recognizing that you can get better at the other ones. So you can start to build like, oh, over time, maybe it's hard for me to sit down and write a joke, but over time I can start to learn a little bit more about the structures, and all of those things are going to feed each other.
I gotcha. That's really good. Well, Andrew, I feel like I could probably keep peppering you with questions from now until eternity. I love humor. It's been a huge part of my upbringing, my childhood, and part of, I love whenever you can make someone laugh and bring some joy to them. I never remember the quote correctly, but I think it was attributed to Robin Williams, who just talked about the pain he felt internally mm-hmm. and the things he dealt with within his depression. He so did not want that for others mm-hmm. that he wanted to bring them laughter and joy mm-hmm. and things like that. And so I think humor is such a powerful thing, and it can feel very ethereal. And so I'm really grateful that you're helping bring that to the ground for a lot of people as an engineer of humor. And maybe you'll break down like how we can hook some electrodes to somebody's head and really test some things. But if somebody's listening to this, they're like, okay, so this isn't an unprofessional mm-hmm. thing. This could also be a great way for me to, maybe I'm struggling in my leadership to connect mm-hmm. with my team or what have you. Let's say I want to be a little more humorous, a little funnier, right? Like, I don't have to be a comedian, but I can be funnier, like you were saying. What's a baby step mm-hmm. someone could take in the next 24 hours, spending little to no money, to make some progress towards enhancing those humorous competencies that may already be a little natural to them?
Yeah, well, I think that's where it starts, is try to just be more intentional about humor. And like I said, we have a completely free assessment on our site if you want to kind of get a little bit of guidance. Mm-hmm. It's a fun resource. People seem to really like it. It helps them to understand a little bit more about their style and giving a place to start it. But even if you don't want to do that at all, finding a way to be more intentional about it, I think, is really key. And one way that we recommend that is we try to encourage this habit of driving one smile per hour, right? And the idea behind it is like, how do each hour of your day do you try to drive one smile either for yourself or on the face of someone else with each hour? Because by doing that, by saying, okay, each hour, as I look at my calendar and what I have coming up, what's one thing that I could do to make this slightly more fun? One, it creates that intention a little bit more. Two, you start to notice just how many different ways there are to add a little bit of levity to your own personal style, where it's like, oh, I've got a 45-minute commute that I'm getting ready to go on. And instead of stewing about my day or getting upset and developing road rage, I'm going to choose to listen to the new Taylor Swift album and see if it's as bad as some people say it is or not. Or I'm going to have a me concert and rock out to the Hamilton musical soundtrack. Or I'm going to listen to a comedy podcast so that I laugh and I have a good kind of mood to start the day. Or it's like, oh, I'm getting ready to go into a meeting with some of my team members. What's one thing that I can do? I'm getting ready to give a keynote. What's one image that I can put it? Like, starting with that kind of idea of one smile per hour, you start to notice, okay, in my own world, within my own capability, whether you've taken the assessment or not, what comes natural to me as a thing to try? And just by doing that, you'll start to create this rhythm. And from there, you can start to grow that skill. So I think that's the one thing that I encourage people to really try to do.
Yeah.
And the last thing that I would just say is, like, for me, I'm incredibly passionate about this. Like, my like broader overall mission of the organization that we have is to try to empower 1 billion plus people to leverage their skill of humor more in life, because I was pushed into it. Like, all of this journey started simply because my best friend wanted to start that improv comedy group, needed people, and pushed me into it. And I feel so fortunate to have that gentle push in the humor that I try to be that gentle push for other people, to kind of be that nudge to say, what does your life look like with just a little bit more levity and fun? Whether you kind of resonate with the way that I teach it or you hate everything that I've said, but if you have that one takeaway of like, but at least I'm going to be a little bit more intentional, that's my primary goal, is just to be that gentle nudge to bring a little bit more levity to your life and for others.
I love that. That's an awesome mission. So I commend you on that. And hopefully this podcast helps spread that message and help a few more people. If people want to know more about you, more about Humor That Works or anything else, or maybe they have some follow-up questions and want to take their next step, how do they connect with you and your work?
Yeah, the best is just to go to humorthatworks.com. So that's humorthatworks.com. Up in the corner, that's where we have to kind of like take the free assessment there if you want. We've got links to all of our social media out there as well. Certainly can feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm incredibly passionate about this. So if people have questions, thoughts, concerns, definitely hit me up. I'm more than happy to engage in those. All of our resources, we had a bunch of free resources on there. And then if you want to go deeper in terms of the keynotes or workshops or coaching or things that we do, all that information is there at humorthatworks.com.
Fantastic. We're going to link all of that up, and we're going to link up your book, Humor That Works, as well on the Amazon. I just added it to my cart. So looking forward to reading that. But Andrew, thank you so much for spending some time and sharing your wisdom with us. I know we're better for it. Listeners, thank you. You spent some of your time with me and with Andrew, and we hope that you enjoyed it and maybe even smiled. It is about an hour, so hopefully you smiled once. Just one time. If you smiled twice, you're doing it wrong. But if this material, if this sort of topic, if this resonates with you, like, rate, review, subscribe, whatever the action button is on your platform of choice, I would deeply appreciate it. If you'd like more of these sort of things, if you want Andrew back sooner rather than later, let me know that in the comments. I love doing all of this. I get a lot of joy from it, but I do it for all of you who are listening and watching. And so I want to make sure that it is delivering value to you first and foremost. Also, interaction gets us in front of more people like you who are looking for content to help them take their next step in their life and in their leadership. And that's a free and easy way for you to pay it forward. And won't that make you feel warm and fuzzy on the inside as you lay your head on your pillow tonight or on whatever it is you sleep on? Mm-hmm. But until next time, change the way you think.